back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. When I get Oriole vibes around here and I put the ballpark behind me out on YouTube, you know something special is coming your way. I'll tell you what's special. I'm going down to Bowie, see a minor league baseball game for the first time in like, it's been so long that I don't even really remember how long. That's how long has been. Marty Conway spent a lifetime around major league ballparks. I don't know if he's been to minor league ballparks much lately, but the stenchitude of the Orioles play behind me, Marty, has led me through Crofton this week to Bowie. And, you know, all my friends have been. Moeller went last week. Luke went the other night, bought a ticket behind Adley Rutschman. So we're all looking for ways to expend our extra dollars in sportitude, aren't we?
Yeah, no. In fact, yeah. No, I grew up with minor league baseball. I worked for the Syracuse AAA team. That was my ideal. I mean, I had my dream job when I was 16, so you couldn't top that. And so, yeah, no, I was raised on minor league baseball. And even when I was working for major league teams, I would often go to minor league parks. I mean, I think it's the, you know, it's the soul of baseball. So, but yeah, I did not get there last year, but I used to take my kids on a regular basis to Bowie. And so really, really appreciate not just that, but what the people that work there and support it do, because they don't make anything nearly what they should. Those are people who have been general managers and ticket takers and ushers and all
that. I had Phil Rye on last week. Phil's been there 21 years, yeah. You know, and yeah. I wish that they were relevant more often. I mean, Luke and I have talked about this, and you said something that I want to hit. You said it's the soul of baseball.
Yeah, it is.
And yet they've shot at the soul of baseball, haven't they? In Frederick and in other places.
They did. In my estimation, look, the idea was to take, you know, 60 teams, 40 some teams, whatever it is, out of the affiliated baseball industry and reduce that footprint and reduce the cost. It's as if somebody in Houston that had a great analytics background said, I think we can produce a baseball player in a laboratory and do just as well, you know, at Driveline or some of these other facilities to do that. And then the second thing is, which I don't think they want to talk about too much publicly, and that is most of the teams have reinvested that money in the Dominican Republic. And it's a heck of a lot cheaper to build and develop a pipeline of talent in the DR than it is through college baseball, high school baseball, scouting, all that. You basically show up in the Dominican and you then have 40 or 50 kids who want to play baseball for nothing and are willing to sign many times for not much to do it. So it's been this shifting. And I think ultimately it has plucked 40 cities or so out of the Major League Baseball pipeline, like Frederick, and dump them into something called a collegiate summer league, which has really no definition. We don't know who the players are. And at the end of the day, I have a friend that just went to Frederick, and he said there was 500 people there, maybe 300 of them are children under the age of 12. And that's a whole lot different than what it was 2 years ago when they would have, and this was fireworks night, when they would have 5,000 people, kids as well as adults. So I don't know. I think Major League Baseball might have overstepped here. I'm not quite sure that they understood the consequences of what minor league baseball did for Major League Baseball in those markets. But, you know, that's their play at this point, not mine.
Marty, I had Michael Kay on this week, you know, Yankees broadcaster. He's done a book called Center Stage, with kind of doing what I'm doing, talking to other people about other things other than just baseball or sports, even though he's sort of famous for the Yankee thing. And you know, we got to talking about the game and his 30 years of like looking at the Orioles and where all of this stuff goes and where hope is and what the level of expectation is. It really is amazing. Like when I think of baseball and you worked in it for so long, has there been a point where it was well run, where they made really great decisions? I mean, I'm literally trying to, in my mind, think of any decision that's been made in the modern era, the last 20 or 25 years, that's been a great decision. Whether it's interleague play, whatever the controversial parts of it is, where they could take Monty Hall, door one, door two, door three, you know, they've always taken sort of a weird door. And I guess the first trap door was, we can all spend a different amount of money and have a great sport, and it'll all work itself out because we'll just tell the poor teams that there's a Tampa around every corner. There's a Houston rebuild. Mm-hmm. And I just think on the baseball level, this is globally, it's decision-making, and it's some short-sightedness that seems to happen every time there's a decision somewhere. I can't think of any David Stern moment or Adam Silver moment or whatever the glory moments of Roselle would be, or even the perception of what Goodell or Tagliabue did. But baseball in the last 30, give me one or two things you think have been globally good when they make a decision that's a big decision.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. There's a number of things where they've been, the owners themselves have been divided, which has kept them from being progressive. I would point to two things that I think have moved the game forward over the last 20 plus years. Number one, you mentioned interleague play. I think at the time it was considered this sort of, you know, gadget type thing, but I think it's turned into something where literally now seeing the Dodgers in Baltimore or seeing the San Francisco Giants or whatever it is, I think that does help the game. And this artificial separation that the only time we meet in the World Series wasn't sustainable. The other thing, which is really below the radar but wouldn't be noticed, is what they did in digital with MLB at bat, which was to digitize the games. They were literally, you know, prior to the NBA, prior to the NFL, anybody else, they were the first ones to develop that platform to put game out-of-market games onto an application, to the point where Steve Jobs selected the MLB at bat app as a featured app, brought him up on the stage.
Game has been run by nerds well like that, right? That's the baseball side of it.
Yep.
Is that the
Bob Bowman.
The analytics people, they measure well.
Yep.
But cut well?
Well, ultimately what happened was each team invested $1 million and they got that investment back in spades, and they ended up selling that underlying platform, which was distributing NCAA, March Madness streaming. All of that was being done on the basis of MLB at bat app that they developed. And ultimately Disney bought it for about $2 or $3 billion a few years ago. So that was a windfall for them. But you're right. On the other side of things, I think if you were to ask me who is the worst marketing league organization in the country, it's Major League Baseball. At the end of the day, the only thing that they promote, frankly, is games that are on air, the All-Star Game, and the World Series. And that's not where most fans are. Most fans are coming to Baltimore, Washington, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, et cetera. And as I tweeted out the other day, now that all the parks came back with 100% capacity in the last week or two, it cried out for a national Baseball is Back campaign, which was really simple. 1-800, call your local team or go online and click to get a ticket, because you want to see Shohei Ohtani, you want to see Mike Trout, you want to see Juan Soto, you want to see Manny Machado, all these stars under the age of 25 that are out there, and baseball just doesn't act collectively. They let each franchise sort of do what they want to do in their local market, and I think it's not something the NFL or the NBA would ever allow to happen.
Boy, you have to really put your foot down when you got something special. And this is maybe where the Ravens are with Lamar Jackson. I had a long, passionate conversation with Ed Frankovic about all things Leonsis and Barry Trotz, sitting here watching the Islanders. Even when they lose 8-0, I'm watching them and playing. And, you know, I guess how all this thing stacks up post-pandemic for people to come back, and what gets marketed. And I mean, obviously I'm going to see Adley Rutschman. I'm going the night that Rodriguez is pitching. It turns out to be Margaritaville nights. Lucky me, down in Bowie, this week. But what captures your attention and what gets you out? Marty, I've told you a million times, my dad and I would in the '70s now. So I'm thinking 73, 74. Once I figured out who Nolan Ryan was, once I figured out who Sixto Lescano and Rod Carew and George Brett, there was a reason Fred Lynn, Jim Rice, that I would, Butch Hobson was one of my favorite players, why I wanted to go see a player or a pitcher. That became my thing with the Phillies, where once I got the car keys and I could go see Steve Carlton pitch or Doc Gooden or see Daryl Strawberry or see Oral Hershiser or see Fernando Valenzuela, I did all of that. I saw all of those people pitch in Philly, snuck down into the cheap seats late in the game, watch Fernando, you know, all of that. You'd like to think when Ohtani comes, maybe if he pitches on the Wednesday night, they're here or whatever, maybe 10,000 extra people would show up that night, because it's like seeing Babe, Eff, and Ruth, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a crazy thing. I don't know, dude. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm thinking about it. It's in the middle of my crab cake tour. I know it's those three nights. I know he's been pitching. I know this might be a limited time offer, like Springsteen on Broadway. And there used to be a time where like there was a real bump in that, right? In Fernando Mania or whatever. I don't know. To your point, if Shohei Ohtani doesn't get you out to Camden Yards on the night that he's pitching, and he might pitch here for 3 years, however it turns out when they come through, whether he's going to remain a pitcher, if you love baseball and you love the fascination of it, it would seem to me that would be a big night anywhere he would be. But it's not really, right? I mean, I don't anticipate any problem getting a ticket that night.
I don't either. And actually, I plan to go at least two of those nights that they're here. But what I do think will happen is there's going to be a substantial population of Japanese Americans out of Washington, D.C. What you underestimate is in the D.C. area, there's these enormous populations of nationals from other countries and heritage and things like that. And it happened when Baltimore had the pitcher from Taiwan, right? Sure. And there would be 3,000-4,000 people just to come just for that. So I think Ohtani in Baltimore, because he's not coming to Washington this year, I think that will be circled. I'd be surprised if that's not a substantial weeknight crowd. It's not going to sell out.
I should have bought that U2 tour shirt in Tokyo, shouldn't I, Marty?
Substantial crowd to do that. But that's, like you said, whether it's Jacob deGrom now instead of Dwight Gooden 25 years ago, or whether, it's the next Roger Clemens or whatever it is, that's what tends to draw. Look, you're talking about people, and they've already done this. They've already made the trek to Bowie through virtually word of mouth, right? I mean, there's been no huge advertising campaign about Rodriguez or Rutschman or anything else. It's just been largely word of mouth. And that's not to be underestimated, that there are a lot of people in the baseball pipeline who know what's going on and are not going to come to Camden Yards until those players show up there. And then I think that will be a boost, which I think has to happen no later than next spring. I don't think the rebuild concept, this is probably the bottoming of it. I hope it can't go on any longer. People are not going to come out to a ballpark generally to see people that they have no idea who they are and no idea whether they'll be there beyond this year. So,
or no idea whether they'll get a hit until the eighth inning through two rain delays against the best team, the Chiefs, yeah, on earth. Marty Conway's here. He loves baseball. He loves sports. Sometimes he officiates it. Sometimes he opines on it. When we're lucky, out on LinkedIn or Twitter, you follow him out there. The good professor from Georgetown and one time, long time executive of the Baltimore Orioles and the Texas Rangers. All right, so let me move the boat a little bit. I got into it with Frankovic about Leonsis, and obviously they have a basketball situation now there. Dennis Colatzos and I were talking this week. He's like, you're not watching the NBA. How can you not? And I don't, it's not that I feel dirty coming to the party late. I mean, Lord knows I started watching the Islanders like a week ago, right? So like, you can come in late. You're allowed to show up in the third set of the French Open semis when guys like you and everybody on my timeline on a Thursday saying, put the match on. It's incredible right now, right? Like, so I did, and I do, and I'll jump in, and I'm a guy that'll watch the one race a year or whatever. Where's sports right now? You've been at this a long time. We've talked incrementally every 2-3 months throughout the pandemic about what happens after this. I don't know that I was braced for maybe being in New York next week and the Islanders in the Stanley Cup Finals on 4th of July weekend, or even the NBA Finals being served in July, or how we're getting it on TV. But it does feel, and it's been a while since I've had you on, man. It felt like sports wasn't even, the last time I had you on, may have been like opening day range, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels like sports is back. And I mean, mm-hmm, back, like my wife has watched 5 golf tournaments the last 4. She was watching women play golf 3 weeks ago for hours on end. She's watched tennis. She is the reason I'm watching hockey. She puts the Orioles games on just to see what's going on. She doesn't really watch the Red Sox or anything like that, but like, sports is on and it's there again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that people, all everybody 2 feet like jumping in the puddle came back in any way, whether it's gambling, whether it's showing up, whether it's watching it on TV, but it's there again and it's percolating a little bit, and it's percolating differently because it's July and they're playing hockey and basketball and stuff's happening and we're looking for it, I think.
Right. Yeah. No, sports is a wayfinder for life. And that's what we missed during the pandemic, especially during the period of time when it was essentially shut down here and around the world, which is, it's May. How come I'm not watching the Indianapolis 500? It's June. How come we're not seeing the NBA Finals, right? It's that sort of wayfinding that we've been built up over decades and decades to you know, accustomize ourselves to do that, to sort of socialize ourselves to do that. And then when it's not there, it's like when there's no baseball on opening day because of a strike or whatever it is, it's disorienting. And now I think if I had to describe it, I would say people are reorienting themselves around sports, right? Live sports, televised live sports, et cetera, things like that. But it's different in this regard. Those trends that were happening prior to March of 2020 have been accelerated through the pandemic. What does that mean? The live event challenge is still there. People are less willing to go to a live event, even though they missed it for a year. They're willing to substitute it for television. They did that. We had conversations about people not coming to Ravens games, not coming to Oriole games, right?
For years now, before, we've had those.
For years. And that conversation is picking up and it will accelerate because it's in your hand. Why do I have to go do it? So I think what you're seeing is the strong are getting stronger. Look, the NFL is probably the one sport and one league in the world that gained through the pandemic, right? They showed their strength. They were able to bulldoze their way through it. They only had
it cost them very little, right? It cost them the gate, which right. would have been everything in hockey or whatever, right? But it right. cost them the gate, but that's all it cost them, and that's a pittance, literally.
They were only able to get 6% of their available gate population in during the pandemic. So 94% of their typical gate population wasn't able to show up. It barely made a difference. Did it make a difference on the margins in some teams? Yes, certain people that own stadiums or have bigger investments, and I cite that. I say, like here in Baltimore, I'm sure there was an impact, but at the end of the day, it hurt the Ravens very little. They don't have an investment in a stadium. They don't own it. They don't have to operate it. They don't put other events in there. So some organizations that were multifaceted prior to hurt worse because they had a bigger investment, a bigger note to pay. Other organizations that rent the stadium and have a free training facility and all that, it didn't hit them nearly as much. So we had this, that was sort of what was going on during the pandemic. And then NBA teams, for example, were hit exceptionally hard. Why? Many of them own or operate an arena, so they didn't get the other revenue from the non-NBA games. And so you saw the collective debt of the NBA go from $4.5 billion in 2019 to $6.5 billion in 2021. Eight teams took additional tranches of debt to pay off the issues that they had. So all of that was percolating back in 2019 and early 2020 is just spilled over. But from a fan standpoint, we've just sort of reorienting ourselves to do that. And some are winners and some are losers. And I think that's kind of what's happening out there. Some new sports are developing, indoor sports, lacrosse, different things. Some of the existing sports, with the exception of the NFL or SEC football, are probably going to see some of these struggles for a little bit.
What have you been watching? Anything?
I've watched everything that I could possibly watch. Like your wife, I will watch a golf event halfway around the world for 30 minutes or 60 minutes because I just want to see what that culture is and what's happening. I haven't watched as much hockey. I haven't watched as much NBA. I've watched a ton of baseball. I watched a ton of auto racing, and I watched the European championships right now. So
there's been a lot of soccer the last month, right?
Yeah. I, like you, I'm drawn to personalities. I watch MLB Network to see Otani when he pitches or hits or things like that. I'm drawn to those type of stories. And I just find it interesting because at this point you have to go find your sport, right? There's a ton of it on streaming and everything else. But you have to go find it. It's just not going to hit you in the
face.
It's
literally anymore. Like my wife and I got into it at 7:56 on Monday night. I'm like, the game's on tonight. I think it's their night. It's the Trots' night to play. I went. I'm like, yeah, it says the game's on. And she's like flipping through USA Network, had it the other day. Then all of a sudden it's NBC and Kenny Albert's not calling the game. And Marty, I don't know. I used to like care and like research all that. Now I'm just like, let me know when the game's on and when you're playing. And if I sleep through it and you're getting no hit in the seventh inning and the rain's hitting my window and I know you shouldn't be playing and you're still playing, I fall asleep and I wake up because you know, I'll be 53. I pee in the middle of the night. About 2:15 in the morning, I come out. I get my glasses on. I look down to see if they got no hit. That's how I deal with the Orioles at this point. Thankfully, they got a couple of hits late in the night after I fell asleep on Monday. But the heartbeat of the Baltimore thing is so much different with the Orioles like this. And it does remind me of why I've moved my brand, that I could never sit here year after year after year after doing it beginning, let's say, 98. And all the 23 years later, for it to be this morose is really, it's something. And I keep looking at it and I keep wondering. And every time I talk to you, I'm like, the broadcasts are horrible. Like, the team is horrible. Everything about it's kind of horrible. And it's June.
Well, that's what I said. This has to be rock bottom, where the team has prospects that are a year or so away, and people can now see them potentially there. Because right now, this substitution idea, that the substitution at third base or shortstop or whatever, that this is going to be somebody that you're going to look to, I just think it hasn't sold. It's not going to sell. And then you got a whole lot of other environmental things going on around the franchise itself, either physically in the city or economically.
Does it matter? Is there a consequence for the Angelo? I mean, I keep wondering this. Like, all of this awfulness, all of this tyranny, all of the losing. Like, I think when they bend Uncle Larry over, they're going to get something. I don't know what they want. You and I have been questioning that all along. What are they going to get in the end? What do they want to stay here instead of putting boots on and going to Nashville? Although they would never do that as long as the Star Spangled Banner. But either way, I see it be this awful. And I keep thinking, like, Adley Rutschman's no more your savior than Matt Wieters was, than Adam Jones was, than like Cal Ripken was. Don't bullshit me. You know what I mean? Like, there ain't no savior in Bowie. This is a real big boy thing. This is marketing. It's involvement. It's community involvement. It's business. All of these things that there's been no, there still is no energy for any of that.
Yeah, there's no, right now there isn't really a fabric or a foundation that is supportive, a network around the organization itself, right? And that's what is sustainable. What I mean is, Adley Rutschman will come up, or Grayson Rodriguez will pitch, and there'll be nice crowds on this date or that date, whatever. But if you look at nights where they are right now, and on a rainy night and all that, if you look at the box score and the attendance, they're announcing about 7,500. That tells you that that's about the core of regular tickets that are sold. So meaning, you know, barely anybody's going to show up on a night where there's thunderstorms and all that. So that tells you that the walk up, you know, minus the walk up and all that, is about 7,500, which means there's probably 2,000 or 3,000 ticketed accounts that make up that 7,000, because people who bought a season ticket or still have one bought two tickets or three or four, whatever that number is. And so that's what I'm talking about. That's what you have to build up, is you have to build that fabric and you have to build that foundation around people buying in advance on the ticket side. And then you have to have investment from corporations willing to benefit from signage and promotional events and suites and other things, because that is where the high margin revenue is. And that's what propels a team forward in terms of being a sustainable, successful, impactful franchise in a marketplace. I don't care if it's Baltimore, Washington, St. Louis, whatever it is, but Baltimore in particular is going to be increasingly reliant on those local revenues to support and sustain that, whether it's gambling revenues, betting revenues, whatever it is. Right now you have a contrast between what the Ravens have been able to do and what the Orioles have not been able to do. And I know they don't like that contrast in the warehouse, but that is the way that corporations have looked at it. Under Armour and others have said, this is an organization that we feel really comfortable with. And then another organization that there's so much ambiguity about, I'm not really sure. So if I provide my products at the stadium and I sell beer or pizza, French fries, or, you know, hamburger rolls, I'm involved there. But if you start to look for, you know, there's no Southwest Airlines or some other organizations that aren't there, pandemic related or not. And that, I think, is your first clue as to sort of what some of those, you know, opportunities are. Now, will that come back? I think it absolutely will, but it's going to take outreach from very top leadership whatever that, whoever that is going forward to rekindle that in the market.
Marty Conway is here. He is the good professor. Marty, I'll leave you with this because I like to kick DC in the nuts on the way out. My wife and I went down the other night, had a little dinner inside the district just to, you know, move around. It was a beautiful night, see some different cicadas and have them hit the windshield the whole way home. You know, you mentioned disgraces that, you know, sits here in Baltimore with this baseball team. And the largesse of the NFL and, you know, what a huge – boy, that Washington football team's something, isn't it? I mean, you talk about running from it and businesses not wanting to be a part of it and people not wanting to be a part of it and women not wanting to be a part of it and just all the way along. And the sale that went down the other day, that he's now taking it all in. So they've gotten the bad guy now to have all of it instead of most of it. Where's this thing going, man? I mean, because the NFL can't be happy about this.
Oh, no, they're certainly not. But it's also, as you see, the NFL is that one business where I say almost it's impossible. The hardest thing to do with an NFL franchise is being able to buy it. After that, yeah, there are headaches in running a team or you have individuals. But at the end of the day, you know, the cash register continues to ring in valuation every year, no matter what, because you rise along with your peers. In Washington, the issue there is there's sort of two things going on. You have the dysfunction in the owner and what his personal issues are and professional challenges present. And what they're trying to do on the other side is to bring in some new blood, fresh blood, to try to revitalize that side of it. But it's still that challenge against the public narrative of, when's the Wilkinson report going to come out? What's it going to say? Is the NFL going to sanction the owner? What are they going to do? Which I think is going to happen prior to the football season. The report will be issued. And then what they'll essentially say is, whatever report is, as soon as you kick off on the first weekend of September, they're going to try to put that all behind them.
Well, no one's going to expect this report to not be the greasiest thing ever, right? Like, no one's expecting this to be a real pretty portrayal of Daniel Snyder or of any of his minions, right?
Yeah, no, I think the public portrayal will be challenging to him, but I don't think it will be detrimental to him. I think the private report that other owners will see and other people inside the NFL on a confidential basis will not look good at all. And I think they will be, frankly, embarrassed by that. But I think what Dan has been doing for the last several weeks is he knows this is coming and he's already making appeals about getting a new stadium. He's made a partnership with Legends Corporation, which is Jerry Jones's corporation, for being able to sell suites and signage and sponsorships in a new stadium, which, by the way, isn't even on the books anywhere yet. So I think he's trying to curry favor within the NFL ownership community to make that penalty as low as possible, whether it's just a fine or whether he's asked to step aside for a period of time. I think that's what he's done, is he put an infrastructure in place that if he was forced to sit out for a season or part of that or pay a fine, they'd be able to do that. But I'm trying to convince
the fan base that he's rehabilitatable.
But I'm convinced that all of that is going to occur between now and the first kickoff, and there'll be a lot of debate and discussion about it. But as is the NFL, once that first Thursday kicks off, man, it's all focus on the field. It's Aaron Rodgers on the field, not off the field. It's Dan Snyder and Washington football team on the field, not off the field. It has the power. The networks have the power to transform our view and thinking, just football related, just fantasy football related, and not the scandals. So I think it'll be a topic of discussion for the next couple of months. Come September, October, we'll be back to talking about where they stand in the division and who they're playing next week and all that.
Are you saying the media has the ability to manipulate minds?
Amazing on that. Isn't that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Isn't there an emoji that kind of goes like this or something?
And
like
on next that? Week's program, we'll discuss Vladimir Putin sitting down with NBC and telling his truth. Marty Conway is here. He teaches things like what he just gave us a dissertation on, which is sports and business and how they sort of intersect at Georgetown University. Marty, it's always great to visit with you, man. I, some point, like, you want to go see Grayson Rodriguez pitch Saturday? It's Margaritaville night, dude. I mean, we got Jimmy Buffett. Come on.
I do plan to get down there at some point this summer and get that opportunity, because I think there'll be some other guys coming up who will bypass there or spend a very short amount of time in Aberdeen. And I think by late July, early August, that next Orioles franchise will be essentially really close together in Bowie. And that's what I think you'll look at for next opening day roster. I think a lot of those guys are going to have to be on it.
Cedric Mullins, Trey Mancini, John Means, and the trading deadline. Ah, must be July here in Baltimore. Let's send Cedric to Denver. He is Marty Conway, but never Atlanta. He is the good professor. You can find him out on LinkedIn. You can find him on Twitter and certainly at Georgetown University, sometimes officiating at various places. Marty, a concert, a ball game, a beer sometime soon, brother. All right?
Got it, man. Thank you very much.
And if Wimbledon gets tight, I'll be following your Twitter to let me know when I need to put it on. All right?
Okay. You got it.
I got eyes everywhere out there. Marty Conway joins us here. Please feel free to follow him. Follow everything we're doing out on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour begins on August 1st. We're going to be heading down to Ocean City. Got the Marlin Open. I'm going to be doing the Maryland Counties event. I'm going to Southern Maryland, Western Maryland. I'm going fly fishing with Dan Rodericks out on the Savage River. I'm even staying at a yurt. I don't even know what a yurt was a couple weeks ago, but I want to stay in one. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.